In the grim darkness of the far future, human life is the cheapest currency. Nowhere is this more evident than in the ranks of the Imperial Guard. Countless ordinary men and women thrown into battle on innumerable worlds. It begs a grim question whispered in bunkers and trenches. What is the life expectancy of an Imperial Guardsman? The answer, as darkly ironic as the universe itself, is shockingly short. How short, really? Some say the average guardsman on a battlefield won't survive past his first day. In this exploration, we'll peel back propaganda and legend to find the brutal truth. From the infamous 15 hours statistic to the blood-soaked histories of entire regiments, from meat grinder battles to the rare heroes who somehow beat the odds. This is the reality of service in the Astra Militarum. It's a story as inspiring as it is devastating, and we'll tell it with a touch of dark humor. Because in the Imperium, sometimes you either laugh or cry. So strap in, and spare a thought for the poor guardsmen on the front lines. They probably won't live to see the next dawn. The Legend of 15 Hours. In Warhammer 40k and lore, an oft-quoted figure for a guardsman's life expectancy is 15 hours. This grim statistic has achieved almost mythical status. It originates from a Black Library novel literally titled 15 Hours, which dramatizes the idea that on a certain hellish war-torn planet, the average fresh Imperial Guardsman survives only 15 hours of combat. Think about that. Just 15 hours from the moment they step into the fray until death, on average. Hardly enough time to unpack your rucksack, let alone learn the names of your squadmates. This notion was so striking that it spread beyond the novel. Later official sources and game materials echoed the concept. If a new recruit survives his first 15 hours of battle, he's considered an accomplished veteran. It's become a dark inside joke among Imperial troops and Warhammer 40k fans to say a guardsman's retirement plan is to live past those first few hours. The phrase, "Thank the Emperor, I made it past 15," might be uttered by a lucky survivor with nervous laughter, knee-deep in the corpses of less fortunate comrades. Of course, 15 hours is a rough generalization, a sort of morbid average that factors in the meat grinder battles, where entire waves of troops are obliterated in minutes. It doesn't mean every guardsman everywhere keels over after exactly 900 minutes of service. Some last days or weeks, some poor souls die within seconds. The statistic is skewed by the truly horrific deployments, where life expectancy can be effectively zero once the shooting starts. Imagine a battlefield so lethal that half a day of survival marks you as one of the lucky ones. In the novel 15 Hours, this was exactly the scenario. A teenage recruit named Arvin Lawn is shipped off to the war-torn world of Brucherok, where a grueling trench war against a horde of orcs has been raging for years. Due to a bureaucratic error, classic Imperium, Lawn's company lands in the wrong drop zone, smack in no man's land between the orcs and the Imperial trenches. The result? Almost his entire company is massacred within moments. Lawn makes it to the relative safety of a trench only by sheer blind luck, and there he learns the horrifying truth. On this front, a replacement guardsman is expected to last only about 15 hours. The defenders have been holding out for a decade, cycling through tens of thousands of recruits who mostly die before seeing their second dawn on the planet. This isn't just black humor. It's a testament to the nightmare conditions of the 41st millennium. The 15 hours legend underscores how incredibly dangerous frontline service is for an average infantryman. It's a rebuke to any romantic notion of glorious, long military careers. For the Imperial Guard, glory often comes in the form of a posthumous medal, if anyone even remembers to record your name. Making it through your first day of real war is an achievement. Yet, as absurd as it sounds, 15 hours can sometimes be generous. On the worst battlefields, a human soldier's life might be measured in mere minutes or seconds. In slightly less hellish conflicts, a soldier might survive a few weeks, months, or, with great luck, even years. But the spirit of that number, 15 hours, captures the grim reality that the Imperial Guard often win wars by sending waves of soldiers into conditions so lethal that most won't live out the day. So, when we say a guardsman's life expectancy is short, we're not kidding. The oft-quoted 15 hours is a kind of symbolic figure, a cruel average that highlights the incredibly high turnover of the Guard's ranks. For every veteran who's fought through dozens of battles, there are thousands who didn't last a single engagement. Keep that in mind as we march forward. In the Imperial Guard, every hour alive is an accomplishment. Meat grinder battles, when survival is measured in minutes. Not every war zone in the Imperium is an instant death trap, but plenty are. Some battlefields earn nicknames like the meat grinder because that's exactly what they are, human bodies fed into a grinding engine of war. On these fronts, a guardsman's life expectancy plummets even further. Forget hours. Sometimes it's minutes. Sometimes it's literally a single charge across a field that ends in seconds of screaming and silence. One infamous example is the Siege of Vrax, a decades-long attritional campaign that has become legendary for its staggering body count. Vrax was an armored fortress world that turned traitor, and the Imperium responded by sending the Death Corps of Krieg, a force of trench warfare specialists who consider massive casualties par for the course. The siege lasted about 17 years of near-constant fighting. Yes, you read that right. 17 years of trench assaults, gas attacks, artillery barrages, and wave after wave of infantry charges. The result? Over 14 million Imperial Guardsmen died taking that one planet. 14 million. Entire regiments were raised, deployed, expended, and then replaced by the next regiment in line, over and over. An appalling 100% casualty rate for the initial waves was not unusual. Many units were literally wiped out to the last man in the first months or even first days of the offensive. Imagine being a fresh guardsman arriving on Vrax's toxic battlefields. The sky is choked with smoke, the ground a shattered hellscape of craters and barbed wire. Your commanders, grim, gas-masked Krieg officers, wordlessly expect you to climb out of the trenches and charge straight into enemy gunfire, because that's the only way to inch forward. You do so because if you hesitate, a commissar might execute you for cowardice anyway. So you run, laser gun in hand, into a storm of shells and bullets. Around you, friends are blown apart by earth-shaking explosions. The chances of reaching the enemy trench alive? Slim to none. But the Imperial Guard's strategy on Vrax, and many other battlefields like it, was simple. Keep charging, keep dying, and eventually overwhelm the foe with sheer numbers and tenacity. And it worked, at a truly ghastly price. If you survived the first charge, there was the second and third, day after day. Very, very few soldiers lasted through the entire siege from start to finish. Most were lucky to survive a few engagements before joining the mountains of corpses carpeting the battlefield. Vrax is extreme, but it's far from unique. The Imperium's history is replete with meat grinder battles, where casualty figures reach into the millions. The Siege of Vervunhive, in the Sabbat World's Crusade, saw a hive city's entire population and its guard defenders nearly annihilated in brutal urban combat against chaos forces. Only a handful of defenders were left standing when the smoke cleared. The grinding trench war on Brucherok, from the 15-hour story, stretched on for years, consuming multiple regiments entirely. Newcomers were shoveled in to replace the fallen, only to die just as quickly. The Third War for Armageddon against the Orcs turned parts of that planet's surface into apocalyptic wastelands, where waves of Imperial Guardsmen and local planetary defense forces charged out of their bunkers to counter Orc hordes, often leaving only blood-soaked ground to mark their stand. In one notorious incident, the Imperial forces managed to bring down a gargantuan Orc war machine, but only after an entire brigade of guardsmen sacrificed themselves to distract it. And on Armageddon, a single Hive city, Hades Hive, was obliterated by an Orc asteroid impact. Millions died in moments. There's no foxhole deep enough to save you when an asteroid falls on your head. These meat grinder scenarios illustrate the cold strategic logic of the Imperial Guard. When in doubt, throw more bodies into the fight. Individual guardsmen are painfully aware of this logic. They joke at their own expense that they are shield number 5,000,001, practically expected to catch bullets with their bodies so the next man can shoot. A dark joke in the trenches goes, "If the enemy doesn't kill you, the commissar will, so either way you die a hero." The only consolation is knowing that your sacrifice might buy a few more yards of ground or a few more minutes for your side to win. On these battlefields, survival comes down to a mix of luck and the tiniest slivers of tactical advantage. Did an artillery shell land 2 meters to your left instead of on your head? Congratulations, you live. For now. Did your regiment get the luck of attacking 5 minutes after the last enemy machine gun ran out of ammo? Hooray, you might actually make it across this time. But there's always another gun, another charge, another deadly obstacle. The war of attrition only ends when one side is utterly spent. For the Imperial Guard, it's almost never the enemy running out of bodies first. The Imperium can always find more soldiers to throw in. New recruits from some distant Hive city or feral world, barely trained, shipped in to replace the fallen. This is how grinding campaigns are sustained. It's a sausage grinder that is fed with human lives. In these conditions, a soldier's life expectancy becomes a statistical quirk, a macabre number crunched by the Departamento Munitorum back on Terra. To them, losing 100,000 soldiers to take a fortress might be acceptable, even expected, as long as the objective is secured. To the poor souls in the mud and blood, it means virtually everyone they know will be dead by the time the battle is won. So yes, 15 hours starts to sound almost optimistic in a true meat grinder battle. Many guardsmen would be ecstatic to survive that long amidst a major offensive. In such hellish conditions, life expectancy is better measured in heartbeats than hours. Yet, unbelievably, the Imperial Guard prevails time and again by enduring these losses. They win by attrition, by outlasting or simply outspending the enemy in lives. It's an awful calculus, but it's the reality of the Guard's way of war. And every guardsman, from the rawest conscript to the grizzled veteran, knows that one day the numbers will catch up to them too. Only in death does their duty end, and on battlefields like these, death tends to collect its due sooner rather than later. Enemies on every front. Why guardsmen die so quickly? The Imperium of Man spans 1,000,000 worlds, and its guard fights on all of them against every nightmare imaginable. A guardsman's life expectancy is directly tied to what he's up against. Sadly for the guard, most enemies they face are terrifyingly lethal. Let's take a tour of a few favorite opponents and see why so many guardsmen meet such swift ends when confronting them. Orcs. The Green Tide. Orcs are one of the most common foes. These brutish aliens live for war. They charge headlong into battle with roaring guns and crude choppers, axes the size of a man. Facing an orc war, a massive orc invasion, is like trying to stop a tsunami of green muscle. Orcs don't take cover, they don't feel fear, and they outnumber you easily. In close combat, an orc is several times stronger than a man and will happily tear a guardsman limb from limb. Imperial tacticians often resort to massed firepower to cut orcs down, but that requires the guardsmen to stand and shoot until either the orcs or the humans are all dead. Often, it's both. The novel 15 Hours illustrated an orc war where countless recruits were fed into the meat grinder to hold the line. Orc snipers, orc artillery, orc berserk charges. There were endless ways to die. If the orcs storm your trench, it's over. If you stay too long out of the trench, their machine guns will mow you down. Life as an orc fighter is brutal and short. Yet, guardsmen do it because someone has to stop the green tide before it overruns humanity. As one cynical trooper put it, "We're here to soak up bullets and orc chopper blades so the Imperial Navy has time to nuke M from orbit later." Not entirely inaccurate. Tyranids, the devouring swarm. If orcs are a tsunami, tyranids are a devouring plague. These extragalactic alien monsters descend on planets in the billions, a seething swarm of claws, teeth, and bioweapons. They literally eat everything in their path. For a guardsman on a tyranid-infested front, life expectancy can be measured in how long your ammo and barricades hold out. Once either runs low, you're just another meal. Tyranids range from human-sized horrors to building-sized behemoths, all coordinated with hive-mind efficiency. They bombard you with living artillery, spore mines, and venom cannon blasts, then crash upon your lines in waves. It's not uncommon for entire regiments to simply vanish under a carpet of chitin and fang. Consider the fate of the planet Valhalla. Its regiments famously fought a massive tyranid invasion. In one engagement, Valhallan ice warriors held the line against endless tyranid assaults in sub-zero temperatures. Even in victory, their casualties were enormous. Trenches piled high with frozen corpses of friend and foe alike. Many times the Imperium has had to resort to exterminating its own worlds, exterminatus, because the guard couldn't possibly evacuate or save everyone from the swarm. A guardsman might fight desperately for a few days, only to receive an order to fall back and watch his whole planet be scoured of life from orbit. Cheery, isn't it? And if you're wondering, no, they don't always get all the soldiers out in time. Sacrifices are made, often whole regiments left behind as a delaying action, knowingly sent to their doom so others might escape. Few things are more grim than realizing you are that sacrifice, ordered to hold ground against an unstoppable enemy until you're overwhelmed. But countless guard heroes have done exactly that when facing tyranids. Chaos, traitors, and demons. Sometimes the enemy is not an alien at all, but the twisted mirror of humanity. Chaos. Traitorous human armies and cultists can be as well-armed as the guard, and often far more reckless. They'll use strategies like human wave assaults or dark sorcery that turn battlefields into charnel houses. Guard versus guard, or PDF, conflicts can devolve into grinding attrition, as brutal as any Xenos war. But what really makes chaos terrifying are the demons and corrupted super soldiers they employ. A single Chaos Space Marine, a towering, power-armored traitor warrior, can slaughter dozens of guardsmen with ease. Demons, literal manifestations of hellish warp energy, can appear in a battle and cause absolute mayhem, shrugging off normal weapons unless you have rare holy firepower. Picture being a guardsman on the fortress world of Cadia during the 13th Black Crusade. You're manning the walls, facing traitor legions and heretic tanks, which is bad enough. And then reality tears open, and gibbering monstrosities spill out, immune to most of your weapons, slaughtering at will. It's no wonder Cadia, despite having some of the finest troops in the galaxy, the Cadian shock troopers, ultimately fell with catastrophic losses. The Cadians fought bravely, whole regiments selling their lives dearly to slow the chaos onslaught. But against demonic foes, heroism only goes so far. A huge portion of Cadia's defenders perished when the planet itself was finally destroyed. The epitaph of that battle could read, "They fought to the last, and then they died as the world died beneath them." The few survivors became refugees, carrying on the legacy, but the regiments as fighting formations were effectively gone. Eldar, Necrons, Tau, and the rest. Guardsmen also fight more conventional Xenos, like the Eldar, crafty, super-fast space elves, or the technologically advanced Tau, or the ancient Necrons. While these enemies might not always attack in endless hordes, they present other terrifying challenges. The Eldar are few in number, but their weaponry and speed mean they can appear, kill a bunch of guardsmen in the blink of an eye, and vanish. Many a squad has been wiped out by an unseen sniper or a gracefully lethal Eldar aspect warrior that moved faster than human reflexes. The Tau often engage the guard at range with high-powered plasma rifles and railguns that punch through guardsmen's armor like paper. In the Damocles Gulf Crusade and the Taros campaign against the Tau, Imperial guardsmen found themselves outmatched in firepower. Some units were cut down without ever seeing a Tau soldier face to face, simply because the Tau could kill them from miles away with pinpoint accuracy. The casualty lists in those campaigns were soberingly high. One Imperial assault on a Tau-held strongpoint turned into a kill zone where an entire regiment was effectively destroyed in a single day by superior fire and by commanders underestimating the enemy. And then we have the Necrons, reanimated metallic horrors that simply won't stay down. Necrons can vaporize a human with a single shot from their Gauss weapons, and to add insult to injury, Necrons that get killed often self-repair and stand back up. An anecdote from one encounter. A platoon of guardsmen held a perimeter against Necron warriors for an hour, killing many at great cost, only to watch in despair as the fallen Necrons glowed and rose back to unlife. The exhausted guardsmen realized with horror that their own fallen stayed dead, but the enemy just kept coming again and again. That platoon didn't last much longer. The galaxy throws everything at the Imperial Guard, from plague-bearing horrors that poison the air to giant bio-titans the size of buildings, from mad psykers who can fry your brain with a thought to enemy super-heavy tanks and gargantuan war machines that can level cities. Guardsmen are ordinary humans amid all these threats, and they have to stand their ground with little more than a rifle, a basic flak vest, and their faith in the Emperor. It's often said in the Guard that if the enemy doesn't get you, the environment will, meaning a lot of battlefields themselves are death traps. Fight on an ice world and you might freeze or starve if you don't get shot. Fight on a poisonous jungle death world, and every plant and insect is trying to kill you even when the enemy isn't around. Fight in the void of space, say, boarding a cursed space hulk, and one stray shot could puncture your hull and suck you into the vacuum. Given all that, it's honestly amazing any guardsmen survive any war at all. And yet they do. Some manage to endure far longer than the average, though always under the shadow of death. The type of enemy dramatically affects how you're likely to die, but the end result tends to be the same. Whether burned to ash by a plasma blast, eaten by a tyrannid, blown apart by an orc bomb, corrupted by a sorcerer's curse, or just caught by a lucky sniper's shot. There are a million ways for a life to end violently in the Imperial Guard. Small wonder that optimism is a rare commodity in the barracks. As a popular saying goes, hope is the first step on the road to disappointment. Most guardsmen don't hope to live, they just hope to accomplish something before they die, even if it's as simple as taking one more enemy with them or holding the line for one more minute. Because sometimes 1 minute can decide a battle, and at least that gives their death a meaning. Training, tactics, and the regiment lottery, factors in survival. Not all guardsmen are equal, and not all find themselves in the same kind of meat grinder. A soldier's odds of survival can depend on what regiment they belong to, how well trained they are, what gear they carry, and the strategy of their commanders. In the lottery of the Imperial Guard, some tickets are slightly less unlucky than others. Quality of training. The Guard is drawn from every corner of the Imperium. Some recruits are Hive City gangers who've been shooting and stabbing since childhood. Others are farm boys who'd never held a real laser gun until basic training. Some regiments, notably the famed Cadian Shock Troopers of Cadia before its fall, received intensive drill from birth. Cadia had a saying, "Every citizen is a soldier." And it showed in battle. Cadian units were disciplined, well-coordinated, and precise, which translated to slightly lower casualties, at least initially, compared to a green rabble of conscripts. A well-trained unit is more likely to take cover at the right time, or lay an ambush instead of blundering into one. That can mean the difference between losing half the squad in the first salvo, or surviving to fight another day. On the other end, we have regiments raised in a panic during desperate times. For example, when a tyrannid hive fleet looms and whole hab blocks of civilians are conscripted overnight, these poor souls get a rifle thrust into their hands and maybe a week of rushed training, then straight to the front. It's no surprise their life expectancy is abysmal. They simply don't have the skills to last long under fire. One veteran sergeant quipped he could tell how long a newbie would last by how they held their laser gun on day one. "The ones holding it by the wrong end won't see the next sunrise," he joked darkly. Equipment and armor. The standard gear of a guardsman, a laser gun, a bayonet, a flak vest, and helmet is reliable but basic. It works, but it's not going to stop a bolter round or a tyrannid claw. Some elite troops get better kit. The Tempestus Setions, stormtroopers, have carapace armor that can shrug off a bit more punishment and hotshot laser guns that hit harder. Those guys often operate in smaller units using special tactics. Their superior gear and training mean they don't suffer the same mass casualties. Except they're given the toughest missions, so their losses catch up anyway. It's a trade-off. Fewer random deaths from flimsy armor, but more insanely dangerous assignments because high command figures you're the only ones who might pull them off. Other regiments might have unique equipment suited to their world. The Armageddon Steel Legion fight in gas masks and greatcoats on a toxic ash world, which helps them survive poisonous atmospheres that would kill unprotected units. The Catacan jungle fighters, drawn from a death world where everything tries to kill you, carry hefty blades and customized las carbines, and they know every trick for surviving in deadly jungles. Tactics that save them from many ambushes and natural hazards that would wipe out others. But at the end of the day, even the best kit in the guard is still human kit. They don't stroll around in power armor. That's for space marines. A flak jacket might stop shrapnel or a low-caliber round, but it won't save you from a direct hit by an orc slug or a Necron Gauss beam. Autopsies of fallen guardsmen, when there's enough body left to autopsy, often show wounds that punched straight through their armor. As the cynical quartermasters say, "We could issue everyone power armor, but then what would the Marines wear? Better to save it for them. You lot won't live long enough for the maintenance anyway." Gallows humor, indeed. Specialized roles. What a guardsman does in the army also matters. A frontline trench infantryman clearly has one of the shortest straws. By contrast, an artillery crewman miles behind the lines might last a bit longer, at least until the enemy zeroes in with counter-battery fire or airstrikes. Vehicle crewmen, tankers, Chimera APC drivers, have slabs of adamantium between them and small arms fire, which certainly improves survival odds in many battles. Being inside a Lehman Russ tank is safer than being the poor sod on foot running beside it, until an anti-tank missile or a rampaging monster turns that tank into your tomb. Still, statistically, tank crews often survive engagements that would annihilate exposed infantry. Then there are scouts and snipers who avoid direct confrontation. They could outlive others by staying unseen. Indeed, some of Gaunt's Ghosts, a famous scout infantry regiment, survived multiple campaigns largely by not being where the massive firefights were, instead striking from the shadows. But even scouts are at high risk. If they're discovered, they usually lack heavy support and are in small teams, so they can be wiped out quickly. One ill-timed crack of a twig in the wrong jungle, and a whole recon squad can vanish under a volley of enemy fire. And let's not forget support personnel, medics, engineers, clerks, cooks. They're usually not on the front line, though in 40K, the rear areas can still be pretty bloody. These folks have a slightly better chance at surviving, since they aren't first over the top, until the enemy breaks through and overruns the camp, or saboteurs infiltrate, or a stray artillery shell lands on the field hospital. There's a bitter joke. In the Guard, frontline troopers die first. Support troopers die last. But everyone dies. Leadership and strategy. Perhaps one of the biggest factors is the quality of leadership. An astute, pragmatic commander might try to minimize pointless casualties using clever tactics, reconnaissance, proper artillery support, and avoiding futile frontal charges. A famous example is Commissar Kiafas Kane, celebrated in memoir equal parts heroic and humorous, who had a habit of avoiding needless danger, largely to save his own skin, but in doing so, he saved his soldiers too. Under leaders like him, a company might miraculously have higher survival rates because they'd withdraw from hopeless fights, fortify positions rather than charge blindly, and generally not throw lives away unless absolutely necessary. On the flip side, the Guard has no shortage of glory-hungry or incompetent officers. Perhaps the archetype is the pompous general who treats his men as limitless ammunition, the kind who orders a bayonet charge against entrenched machine guns simply because the Emperor wills it. Under such leadership, life expectancy nosedives. The history of the Guard is replete with disasters caused by commanders who saw their troops as expendable. The Taro's campaign against the Tau, for instance, ended in Imperial withdrawal largely because the commanding general arrogantly underestimated the enemy and wasted thousands of guardsmen in poorly planned assaults, a textbook case of trading lives for nothing. Think of commanding officers as either shepherds or butchers. If you get a shepherd, he'll still lead you into deadly situations. This is war, after all. But at least he'll try to get you out alive and achieve victory with brains, not just bodies. A butcher will march you straight into the meat grinder without hesitation. Unfortunately, the grim bureaucracy of the Imperium often rewards butchers. They achieve their objectives through sheer brute force and then get a pat on the back for the win, while the piles of corpses they expended are glossed over. Homeworld and culture. The origin of a regiment can also influence its survival style. Deathworld natives, like the Catacans, are incredibly hardy and accustomed to lethal environments. They tend to have instincts that keep them alive where others would perish, knowing which alien plant not to touch or how to set traps for a stalking predator. Hive world gangers turned guardsmen are street tough and excel at urban combat. A Necromundan regiment might take fewer losses in a city fight by savvy use of cover and ambush, whereas a less streetwise unit could get lured into crossfires. Feral world regiments, from primitive planets, might lack high-tech experience, but often have ferocious bravery. Sometimes to their detriment, they might charge a tank with a sword. Yet sometimes that sheer fearless aggression can overwhelm an enemy who expected humans to flee. A tribe of axe-wielding warriors might actually survive a melee that a more civilized unit would lose, simply because they're that fierce. And then there are penal legions, units of criminals sent to war with explosive collars around their necks. To be blunt, their survival chances are intentionally near zero. The Imperium uses them for the worst tasks: suicidal distraction attacks, forlorn hopes, clearing minefields by running through them, you name it. Penal troopers know they're considered totally expendable, even by guard standards, and they fight with the desperation of men who literally have nothing to lose. If a normal guardsman might statistically last a few battles, a penal legionnaire is doing well if he lasts a single battle. One might say the only retirement a penal soldier can expect is when his collar detonates or a last bolt finds him. All these factors, training, gear, role, leadership, and culture, can nudge a guardsman's survival odds up or down. But let's not overstate it. Even on a good day, in a well-equipped unit under a brilliant commander, you're still just a mortal man in a galaxy very efficiently designed to kill mortal men. A Cadian sharpshooter with expert aim might survive multiple firefights by picking off enemies from cover, until the day an unseen sniper draws a bead on him. A tank crew might get through battle after battle in their steel beast, until the day an orc commando slips a bomb under their hull and turns it into a funeral pyre. The Astra Militarum is full of tales of decorated regiments with centuries of honors that nonetheless were obliterated to the last soldier when fortune turned against them. Perhaps the biggest factor of all is pure luck. Veterans will be the first to tell you. Sometimes the difference between the guy who dies and the guy who doesn't is simply luck. Being in the right foxhole when the mortar hits the one next to it. Bending down to tie your bootlaces the moment a sniper's bullet whizzes through the air where your head had been. Luck, or if you're pious, the Emperor's grace, is what so much boils down to. And every guardsman knows luck doesn't hold forever. No matter how skilled, brave, or careful, if you keep rolling the dice in battle, eventually your number comes up. The trick is to make your life count for something before that happens. In short, some guardsmen do manage to extend their personal life expectancy a bit by being smarter, better prepared, or just in a safer role than others. These are the ones who become the hardened veterans, the scarred survivors of many campaigns. Every regiment has a few of them, at least until the next bloodbath. They're the troopers who duck a second before everyone else, who can smell an ambush and avoid it, who know when to charge and when to fall back. They are priceless to their units, and often they get promoted, which sometimes ironically puts them in even more danger. The enemy always aims for the officer with the most medals, as the joke goes. But no matter who you are in the guard, the final truth remains. War in the 41st millennium is so deadly that even the best of the best are living on borrowed time. Sooner or later, the bill comes due. The rare few, heroes who beat the odds, for a while. By now, it's clear that the average guardsman's story is likely to be short. However, not every guardsman dies in his first battle. A hardened minority managed to survive engagement after engagement, defying the grim statistics, at least for a while. These individuals become the heroes, the veterans, the names that new recruits are taught to revere, and which Munitorum propagandists plaster on recruitment posters to prove not everyone dies right away. Take the legendary Commissar Ibram Gaunt and his regiment, the Tanith First and Only, nicknamed Gaunt's Ghosts. The Ghosts were scouts and light infantry who fought through an entire crusade's worth of battles in the Sabbat worlds. Did they take losses? Absolutely. Horrendous ones. In their first major action after being raised, they lost a huge portion of their troops. Over the years, the regiment was whittled down further and had to absorb recruits from other worlds to keep going. Yet a core of them, led by Gaunt, survived dozens of deadly missions. Trench raids, urban sieges, covert infiltrations, full-scale assaults, you name it. They became experts at not dying, using stealth, marksmanship, and sometimes sheer narrative luck. One might say the Emperor really had his hand on Gaunt's shoulder, given the close calls they survived. But even in those novels, beloved characters, crack snipers, grizzled sergeants, even Gaunt's second-in-command are killed one by one as the war drags on. By the later books, the First and Only is a patchwork unit of survivors and replacements. Gaunt himself has been wounded many times. He even lost an eye and was tortured nearly to death at one point. But he perseveres. If you asked him the secret of his longevity, he'd probably say it's by valuing his men's lives and not wasting them uselessly. That philosophy, treating soldiers as people rather than ammunition, is rare in the Imperium, and it's a big reason why some of his men lived long enough to become graying veterans. In other words, Gaunt tilted the odds for his troops by not feeding them into pointless charges. But he's the exception, not the rule. Then there's the famously lucky Commissar Siafis Kane, whose published memoirs, full of witty, self-deprecating humor, recount a career of doing everything possible to stay alive, and somehow succeeding in the most spectacular ways. Kane fought orcs, tyranids, necrons, chaos cultists, you name it, and managed to retire in old age, a hero of the Imperium. How? Partly through skill and cunning. Kane was shrewd and had lightning reflexes, but largely through a keen sense of self-preservation that ironically put him in the right place at the right time to save the day, much to his own surprise. His guiding principle was to avoid dying unnecessarily, which often meant he looked for smart solutions rather than glorious charges. In the insane calculus of 40K, that often turned out to be exactly what was needed to win battles with fewer casualties. Of course, Kane also benefited from a lot of blind luck. He readily admits that many times the difference between him and a corpse was pure chance. An enemy grenade that failed to detonate, a sniper who missed by an inch, arriving at an outpost the day before it was overrun instead of during. Kane's story at least offers a tiny beacon of hope. Someone out there survived the worst and got to die a grandfather in bed. But he's practically a mythical exception, and he'd be the first to insist he was just a very lucky man in a very dangerous universe. We also have larger-than-life figures like Colonel Ironhand Striken of the Catacan Jungle Fighters. A man so tough that when a monster on his home world ripped off his arm, he killed the beast, got a bionic arm replacement, and went right on fighting for decades. Catacans, in general, are known for producing such indomitable survivors. Their home jungle kills off anyone who isn't absurdly tough, so those who make it to the guard are about as hard to kill as humans come. Striken's continued survival, and that of men like Gunnery Sergeant Harker, or the almost mythical one-man army Sly Marbo, both also Catacans, is a blend of exceptional skill, peak physical condition, and pure attitude. They simply refuse to die easily. But even Striken has seen entire platoons of fellow Catacans wiped out around him. He carries the weight of those losses even as he charges into the next fight. Being a living legend in the Guard often means you're the last one standing out of what was once a much larger force. Commissar Yarik is another storied hero, famed for his unyielding resistance against the arch-arsonist of Armageddon and later the great orc warlord Gizgakul Thraka. Yarik fought through the bloodiest battles of Armageddon's wars and became a symbol of defiance. He lost an arm in combat. He famously ripped an orc's power claw off and had it grafted onto himself as a prosthetic, and lost an eye, replaced with a laser eye. Yet he kept fighting well into old age. Orcs came to fear Old Baali, their nickname for him, as an almost supernatural boogeyman, the man who would not die. Indeed, Yarek survived things that should have been impossible for a normal human, fueled by sheer faith and hatred for the enemy. If you asked him, he'd modestly credit the Emperor's protection and the bravery of his men, but one suspects sheer willpower played a role. However, even Yarek's saga isn't exactly a merry retirement story. He outlived most of the soldiers he led, saw cities devastated and rebuilt and devastated again, and kept going because there was always another war. Depending on the source, he eventually met his end either in obscurity after Ghaz Kul disappeared, or possibly captured by the orcs he hunted. In the end, even the greatest hero of Armageddon was only mortal. But his legend, the fact he did survive so long, served to inspire millions. In Warhammer, that's as close to immortality as one gets. There are also entire regiments known for surviving when by rights they shouldn't. The Valhallan 597th, the regiment Kane was attached to for most of his career, started as two shattered regiments that merged after horrific losses. Through war after war, from fighting heretics in an Arctic prison complex to battling tyranids in icy caverns, the 597th took its licks, but enough of them lived to carry on. Under Colonel Kastain and Commissar Kane, they learned hard lessons and became seasoned veterans. By the end of Kane's chronicles, many original members had fallen, but the regiment was still standing, bloodied but unbowed. They beat the odds, not by escaping battle, but by enduring one catastrophe after another and always finding a handful of survivors to rally around the colors for the next fight. For every regiment like that, countless others simply vanish from the rolls after a single campaign. The 597th's tenacity is celebrated, but it underscores how exceptional they are. For most guardsmen who beat the average and survive their first few battles, the reward is usually more battles. The Imperium rarely pulls a soldier off the line just because he served long. If anything, surviving troops are thrown into the next hotspot because veteran fighters are too valuable to sit idle. In some cases, an experienced unit might be given a brief garrison assignment, a respite of guard duty, or rotated to a quieter war zone to train others. But more often, if you're good at not dying, the brass ensures you're always where the fighting is fiercest, because you can be trusted to hold that line. It's a grim irony. Survive this war so you can march straight into the next even more lethal one. Is there such a thing as a happy ending for a guardsman? Very occasionally, yes. There are anecdotes of regiments being granted honorable retirement, often settling them on a world they helped conquer or liberate. Imagine after decades of campaigning, the few hundred battered survivors of a once thousands-strong regiment are told, "You've done enough. This planet is now your home. Lay down your weapons and build a new life here." That is about the sweetest dream a guardsman could ever aspire to, essentially being allowed to become a colonist farmer and die of old age on some quiet agri-world with suns setting peacefully. It's exceedingly rare, but it does happen from time to time. More often, a regiment that's depleted gets folded into another regiment. The old unit's name might be struck from the records, its banner put in a museum, and the survivors given a new designation. The traditions of the past might live on as a footnote in the new regiment's history, but the regiment itself is effectively gone, mustered out by merging into something else. Individual soldiers might be discharged due to severe injury, losing a limb without augmetic replacement prospects, for instance, or age, in which case they may become instructors at a Schola Progenium or PDF training cadre. Those are the lucky ones in their own way. They get to impart some wisdom to fresh recruits, often beginning with "back in my day" and ending with And that's why you always check your flanks, unless you want a Guinness dealer to eat your face. For the vast majority, however, the end comes on some distant battlefield, in a pool of mud or ash, looking up at a sky lit by lethal flashes. And they know this. Guardsmen joke about retiring in a box, or say things like, the only way out of the guard is feet first. They write letters home, if they can, with an underlying tone of, if I don't make it, tell my family I fought hard. They make gallows bets with each other about who will be the last man standing. It's a coping mechanism for a truth they all live with. Serving in the Imperial Guard is not about if you give your life, but when. The measure of success isn't living, it's how meaningful your death was. And yet, these rare survivors and heroes show that within the darkness, human courage and tenacity can shine, at least for a while. They become the figures that new recruits toast in the barracks. If Colonel Strachan can wrestle a giant hell slug and come out alive, maybe I can survive this campaign. They set an almost impossible example, but it gives the average soldier something to hold on to, a sliver of belief that maybe they too can buck fate, if only for a bit. The heroes themselves often shrug off the accolades, knowing better than anyone how much luck and sacrifice was involved in keeping them alive. For every named hero, there were thousands of nameless comrades who weren't so fortunate. In the end, the stories of these survivors don't disprove the grim odds, they highlight them. For every Gaunt or Kane or Yarrick, there are millions of guardsmen who fell in their first skirmish, or their tenth, unremembered except by the brothers and sisters who fought beside them. The heroes carry those memories. As the saying goes, only in death does duty end. These heroes simply had duties that, improbably, haven't ended yet, but they know that one day, sooner or later, their number will come up too. So yes, a handful of guardsmen do manage to string together a longer-than-average chain of tomorrows, long enough to become living legends. But make no mistake, even their long lives, measured in years or decades of war, are a tiny candle flame in the galactic darkness. Eventually, death catches up with them as it does everyone. The true mark of success for an Imperial hero isn't living forever. It's doing something worthy with the time they were given. Perhaps they saved a city, slew a mighty warlord, inspired a regiment to hold when it wanted to break. In the grim tally of the Imperium, those are the closest things to retirement achievements a guardsman can hope for. A legacy of duty fulfilled, written in blood. Conclusion: Duty unto death. So, how short is a guardsman's life, really? In truth, it's brutally short, often measured in mere hours or days once the shooting starts. The Imperial Guardsman lives under constant threat. Every battle could be his last, and statistically, it probably will be. The Imperium's endless wars consume humans like fuel. Yet those very humans, through courage, stubbornness, and faith, are what hold the line. It's tragic and heroic all at once. Some unlucky troopers perish in the first minutes of their first engagement. A rare few, through skill or luck, survive years of constant war. But even the greatest heroes eventually fall. And most soldiers are lost long before that. The life expectancy of an Imperial Guardsman isn't measured in decades of service. It's a brief candle against an eternity of darkness, just bright enough to push that darkness back for a moment. And yet, despite knowing the odds, guardsmen still stand and fight. They crack jokes about their own doomed fate, share one last smoke with a friend, and then charge headlong into the jaws of hell. Because if they don't, who will? The price of humanity's survival is paid in their blood, minute by minute, yard by yard. Every guardsman's death buys a little more time for the Imperium. In the end, the Imperial Guard's unofficial creed says it all. Only in death does duty end. For the average guardsman, duty ends sooner rather than later, but it is carried out with honor until that final breath. A soldier might only live 15 hours on the battlefield, but by the Emperor, they'll fight for every second of it. In the grim darkness of the far future, there is no promise of a long life, only the promise of meaning in sacrifice. The Imperial Guardsman's life may be short, but its impact is colossal. Their duty, no matter how brief, helps ensure that mankind endures. Glory to the fallen, and best of luck to the next poor souls in line.